You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're getting a first look at results from the California primary, and while some races are too close to call, others do have projections, and that includes the race for U.S. Senate. The Associated Press, AP, projects that Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff and Republican political newcomer and former baseball player Steve Garvey will face off in the November election. If you remember, California is a top two state, so that means there could have been two candidates of the same party on the ballot. We're going to get a statewide look at what early returns show. Joining us is CAP Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Laura Cordy, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
All right, Laura, I want to start off with you. I want to start off with the Senate race and ask you this question. I mean, the AP called the race for Democrat Adam Schiff, Republican Steve Garvey. If you were told this back in October when Garvey announced his candidacy, would you have predicted this?
I think that maybe I would have predicted this. I think this was certainly always a possibility. And this is just, you know, due to the fact that if you're a Republican and you can consolidate enough Republican votes in a primary election, you can certainly get into the top two. But I don't think that we can, you know, understate the importance of Adam Schiff spending a lot of money on advertising to boost Steve Garvey. I mean, you know, when Steve Garvey announced in October, he was, this former baseball player that some people have heard of, some people hadn't heard of. There are some folks who expressed to me like, you know, really, is this the best that Republicans can do? This, you know, this baseball player who had never run for office. So there was not a ton of optimism for him in October, but you know, the factors really all collided in his benefit. And like you said, he's going to be on the ballot in November with Adam Schiff, which is a huge coup for the Republican Party.
You were at Steve Garvey's watch party last night, right?
Yeah, down in Palm Desert.
How did it go?
It was about as typical as election night parties normally go. You know, he had a lot of folks there dressed in red, white, and blue, a lot of Republican supporters. There was the East Valley Republican Women's Association there. And he really enjoyed talking with the crowd. You know, he talked about having a strong showing in November. He, you know, kind of joked slyly that Adam Schiff should not mistake his kindness for weakness and that he's going to, come after him in the general election. But in typical Steve Garvey style, he leaned pretty heavily on his roots as a baseball player for the Dodgers and the Padres. His speech was full of baseball puns, you know, saying tonight was the first game of a doubleheader and that he's going to, you know, knock a home run out of the park in November. And then at the end of the night, of course, he threw out signed baseballs to the crowd.
All right. Well, we're just going to have more of that as we head towards November. Nicole, given that, and Laura touched upon this, I mean, Adam Schiff's campaign, they spent a lot of money propping up Garvey as his opponent. I mean, it kind of appears that the gamble, it paid off.
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is a tactic we see sometimes in races because of this top two primary system. If a candidate has enough money, they'll try to elevate a candidate of the opposite party when they're in a race like California statewide, where the competition, the strong competition in a statewide contest, is between Democrats. So Schiff made kind of an early investment in this. He had a very large campaign war chest. He spent millions on TV ads to elevate Steve Garvey in this way. And Garvey himself didn't have that much money. It's expensive to run ads statewide in a race like this. So, you know, by doing it early and elevating Steve Garvey in this way, painting him as the Republican choice, the conservative choice in this Senate race, Schiff is able to avoid a really tough, what could have been a really tough Democrat on Democrat general election fight.
Laura, I mean, just looking at returns so far in the Secretary of State's office, I mean, it shows that Schiff and Garvey, they're not really that far off in votes as it stands Wednesday afternoon. They both have 1.2 million votes. The difference between them is 30,000 votes. Was this closer than you would have expected?
You know, I think that polls showed that it was going to be close. Garvey, for, you know, months had been kind of fighting with Katie Porter for second place in the polls. And then just before Super Tuesday, we got another poll showing that Garvey was possibly even a little bit ahead of Adam Schiff. And so I think this really comes down, like you said, there's still ballots to be counted, but I think this really came down to a question of, you know, who showed up to vote. It was always going to be, you know, kind of a thin margin there. It's really just a question of, you know, who comes in first place, who comes in second place. But I think we always knew it was going to be tight at the top.
Have you heard anything from Katie Porter or Barbara Lee's campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, Barbara Lee just actually issued a statement, you know, congratulating, you know, the candidates who had made it through. You know, she also thanked her supporters and her voters. I think it's important to note that, you know, this is for Barbara Lee and Katie Porter. I don't want to say the end of their political careers, but, you know, they're not going to be in Congress anymore after that. And I think Barbara Lee's supporters, you know, felt that especially acutely. She's been a trailblazer, you know, a very notable person in her Oakland district. She was the only person to vote against war authorization in 2001. And so I think for them and their supporters, there's certainly, you know, air of sadness from this results, not just because they won't be senators, but because this is the end of, you know, two pretty illustrious careers in Congress.
As you mentioned, Lee's district is in Oakland, so it is blue. I would imagine it's likely safe. But Katie Porter's Orange County district is much more of a swing district. How is that race shaping up?
Yeah, absolutely. As is the case with so many races, we don't have final results yet. I believe we're waiting for another round of votes to come in from Orange County. But that district is a swing seat and one that they're watching, both parties are watching really closely. Right now, Republican Scott Baugh is the top vote getter with about 33% of the vote that has been counted so far, followed by Dave Min, a Democrat, at 25%, and then Joanna Weiss at about 18%. This race has really been dominated by the Democrat-on-Democrat fight between State Senator Dave Min and Joanna Weiss. You know, Joanna Weiss has been really trying to hit Dave Min for his DUI that he got last year. But Dave Min has a lot of establishment support. You know, he has Katie Porter's support behind him. And so that's making a big difference. But, you know, this is just the first round of fights here. Whoever gets into the November election will have to deal with Scott Baugh. And that's likely to be a tough challenge, as it has been for Katie Porter in past years.
Another district that is the end of an era, I mean, is Kevin McCarthy's old district. How is that race shaping up in the Central Valley?
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy also, we do not have a call for that one yet. Sorry, it's a disappointing kind of day for a lot of folks trying to watch out here. But, you know, we were watching the contest between Kevin McCarthy's chosen successor, Assemblymember Vince Fong, and Sheriff Mike Boudreau. Mike Boudreau got a certain amount of support from even some of Vince Fong's own colleagues, including State Senator Shannon Grove, who is largely considered to be, a possible candidate herself. But as of today, you know, Vince Fong is pulling ahead. He's at about 38% of votes right now. We also have Mike Boudreau following behind at 25%. So it does look like, you know, if things continue to go the way they are now, it's going to be Mike Boudreau and Vince Fong on the ballot in November. But again, still waiting on the final vote call.
Yep, still early results. Nicole, another swing district is David Valadao's seat in the Central Valley as well. I mean, what stands out to you about this race?
Well, this was another where it was like, okay, will it be a Republican versus a Democrat, or will the Democrats split the vote and it end up being two Republicans in the general election? Right now, unofficial results, of course, are showing David Valadao in first with the most votes. The Democrat, the establishment-backed Democrat, Rudy Salas, you know, he was the one getting a lot of support from the state Democratic Party. Governor Newsom was out like text banking for him. The thing that's interesting, and I wanted to share this, is our content sharing partner in the California newsroom, KVPR's Carrie Klein, talked to the fourth place, the current fourth place finisher, Chris Mathis, who had hoped to be, you know, one of the ones locking out the Democrats in this race. And here is what he told her.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to take everything I have related to politics, and I'm going to take it all out to the recycle bin, and that's going to be the end of that.
So he was somebody not necessarily, not establishment backed, and obviously maybe a little disillusioned by the results here.
Yeah, and kind of called the race for himself with that recycle bin comment. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Cap Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Politico's Laura Cordy about statewide election results and implications after yesterday's primary election. Okay, Nicole, now for state government races, Sacramento, the big one, is Assembly District 6 that was currently held by Assemblymember Kevin McCarty, now running for mayor of Sacramento. What do early results show so far?
This is a district that's heavily blue, like 70% Democratic voters in this district, and a lot of very crowded race. Six Democrats are running, and they have split the vote. But one Democrat has risen to the top. Maggie Krell is a deputy state attorney general. She got a lot of support from business-aligned, law enforcement-aligned groups that sent mailers for her. Saw a lot of yard signs in the district. So she's leading with about 29%. And then the following two candidates in second and third place are both Republicans. So this is one of those situations where it could have been that this went to a Democrat on Democrat in the general election in November. But because there were so many Democratic candidates, vying for that second place spot, it looks like it'll be a Democrat versus a Republican. And if it shakes out that way when all the votes get counted, then Maggie Krell could have a much easier time in November.
Across California, even outside of Sacramento, you talked about this yesterday. How did other legislative races shape up so far according to these early results?
Yeah, so interesting. We talked about this state Senate seat in based around Stockton and how Assemblymember Carlos Villapudua and his wife Edith had strategized to run for the Assembly in the Senate seat. These two are running in third place right now based on these early results. So that could have been, if these results continue, this could be a mistake on their part. And then another one to watch, there's a coastal assembly seat. Democratic Party Chairman Rusty Hicks is running in that North Coast district. He's been endorsed by Governor Newsom, but he's also in third place. He's trailing. So these are early seats, early results, and things may change. I feel like we can't say that enough. There are probably a couple million ballots out there still to be counted, but kind of some disappointing results for some of these candidates that may have thought they had a good chance.
Yeah, Laura, is there a bigger message to at least preliminarily take away from this? I mean, Carlos Villapudua, is an incumbent, and it's not, at least for early results are concerned, not looking good. And then you also have the Democratic Party chair who was endorsed by Newsom. What does this tell you about how the state legislature, those races, are shaking up?
Yeah, it's hard to, decide what exactly was the factor that hurt Carlos Villapudua in the Senate district or, his wife Edith in the Assembly district. There's, maybe some case to be made that, voters kind of get a little bit cynical seeing people make these, strategized plays for office. But, up in Assembly District 2, where, like Nicole said, Democratic Chair Rusty Hicks is running for this North Coast seat, locals have really pushed back. I think people forget that Rusty Hicks is a longtime Los Angeles guy. He came up through labor there. He became, the head of the California Democratic Party. He is well known as a Southern California, politician. So for him to move up to the North Coast and try and run for an assembly seat, I think, potentially turned off a lot of voters. He's getting a lot of pushback from his opponents there. And I think that just goes to show that you have to be really careful and really thoughtful about what seats you run in and what your message is when you run in them. Because I think voters will take note of people who are, just trying to find the best seat to possibly get into office. But, maybe that could change with the results coming in soon. But it's definitely not a landslide for any of those candidates. And I think that, says something about their kind of strategy to get into the race.
Finally, I want to touch upon Prop 1. Nicole, you chatted about this with us during election coverage yesterday. I mean, it's showing at least early results, razor's edge. I mean, it's like right around 50% in either direction. Was this surprising to you?
I think given the amount of money that its supporters, including Newsom, spent on this proposition, it is surprising to see where it is right now. It's like this morning, only 15,000 votes were separating the yes and the no, you know, that deciding factor. So, again, there are many ballots still left to count, and it may go one way or another. I do think it's worth pointing out that this was a proposition that had on paper bipartisan support, but you have Republicans that have been critical of the state's spending on homelessness and questioning whether another $6+ billion bond is the best use of money on this problem. And then you also have people, voters on the progressive side, that have raised concerns that it might lead to involuntary commitment of people that are living on the streets with mental illness. So I think those two concerns kind of came at this issue from both sides. And again, there are many, many ballots left to count.
Laura, given that Governor Newsom campaigned hard for this, I mean, it was a major advocate for Prop 1. Do you think that this is a setback for him?
I mean, I think you kind of undoubtedly have to look at it this way. I mean, if Prop 1 does pass, it's still not great for Governor Newsom. You know, he has a lot of money. Like you said, he campaigned really hard for this. And so I think if it, you know, only passes with a very thin margin, it kind of, you know, calls into question really the power of the Newsom machine. And there were other factors that contributed to that as well. But, you know, if this does not pass, it has far, you know, more extensive implications. This would create more, you know, treatment beds and change the way counties use their mental health dollars. And really, that's so supposed to support other, you know, housing and homelessness agenda items that Newsom has championed over his tenure. You know, there's care courts, the mental health civil courts that's supposed to compel people into treatment. You know, you need beds for that. Newsom has also championed conservatorship reform, making it easier to compel people into treatment. That also is something that you need more support around. And so if Prop 1 doesn't pass, you know, Newsom really loses a key part of his agenda to, you know, help homelessness and address mental health issues. So certainly the stakes are high for Governor Newsom. I imagine he's, you know, sweating at the collar a little bit today.
I mean, yeah, Newsom quickly has called Prop 1 the last big piece of the puzzle for all of these reforms around homelessness and mental health services that he's been working on the last few years. So if that puzzle piece gets thrown out the window, then it'll be really interesting to see where they go from here.
Well, Nicole and Laura, it has been a very busy 24 hours for the both of you. I hope you get some rest. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicky.
That's Cap Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon and Laura Cordy, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Still ahead, we're going to dive into the data of voter turnout and the implications this could have for the November general. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.